A space mystery. Bring up that spooky music. A giant hole in the universe. Scientists studying several different maps of space have found a space in space, a space nearly a billion light years across that contains nothing. No stars, no gas, galaxies, not even any of that mysterious dark matter that astronomers believe make up a lot of the universe. It's even colder than expected there, and there are fewer radio emissions. So what does it all mean? My guests joining me now are Eli Rudnick, Distinguished Teaching Professor in the Department of Astronomy, University of Minnesota in Minneapolis, and Lily Al Williams, Associate Professor in the Department of Astronomy there. They're two of the authors of a paper on the area of space that's been submitted to the Astrophysical Journal. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Hi, Larry. It's been a few years.
It has. You're looking good, Ira.
Larry and I used to work together a lot on Newton's apple back 25 years ago or something like
right,
that. That was
right.
A long time ago. Tell me, Larry, why is this so mysterious? And why you know, did you just discover it now?
Well, just discovering it now was a complete accident. I was frustrated one day with another project that I was working on. And we have a very strong cosmology group here at Minnesota. And we had lectures on this funny cold spot in the cosmic microwave background from the very early universe. And I and my grad student, Shay Brown, have been working on another survey of radio galaxies called the NVSS survey. And so I thought, well, I can't get the stuff I'm working on to work, so I'm going to just go look at that survey in the direction of the cold spot. And I found that there were way too few galaxies there, and that was the beginning of it. And what actually happened at that point was I was completely confused about what I was looking at. So I called Shay in, and I said, look at this. What's going on here? And he said, that's the integrated Sachs-Wolfe effect. And I said, what are you talking about? And so he explained that they had just done that and studied that in their cosmology class, and that's what we were looking at. And that was the beginning of knowing that we were looking at a big void. And we just marched ourselves down to Lilia's office and told her she had to help us out and figure out what this thing was.
Lily, you have any guesses on what's going on out there?
Yeah, what it appears to be is something that we have expected to see but haven't seen in that setting. So we know that in a universe which is dominated by dark energy, we would expect to see areas in the universe that are particularly empty to also be colder than usual. And areas in the universe that have more than their fair share of matter to be somewhat warmer. So people have predicted this for a long time, and people have been observing this in sort of in a statistical sense. Mm-hmm. So what we have discovered is a specific instance of this happening in a very localized region in the universe.
1-800-989-8255 is our number. Talking about this, it's a billion light years, Larry, across?
Yeah, and that was the surprise part. So as Lilia said, the physics of it was expected and had already been seen. But what we did for the first time was isolate a single region, and the calculations that Lilia did showed that this region was just enormous. The size of this void itself was just way beyond what we expected.
So that's a good chunk of the universe, isn't it? I mean, what percentage of the universe would that billion light years be?
Oh, no, it's still not a very big chunk of the universe. Mm-hmm. Well, it depends what you mean. It's one of the biggest structures, if not the biggest structures we know of, but it's not comparable to the size of the universe. It doesn't take up like half or even one-tenth of the universe. No, mm-hmm. It's not that big. Mm-hmm.
But another way to look at that, though, is what would it look like on the sky if you could actually see it?
Right.
And it would cover an area the order of about 40 full moons or so. So it would be enormous if you could see it. But still, as Lilia says, it's still a tiny fraction of the volume of the universe, which may itself be infinite. But it was a surprisingly large chunk, but small in the very grand scheme of things.
Lawrence, you have not lost your talent for explaining things to the lay audience.
Thanks. under your tutelage.
Thank you. Could you think, Lawrence, Larry, do you think they could find more of these? I mean, if the theory predicts them, there should be more of them, right?
I'm going to let Lilia try that one.
Lilia?
Well, we don't know yet. The current predictions for what we expect to find in the universe in terms of large voids are probably saying that we shouldn't find something that big, but that's not the final conclusion. So we don't really know at this point. What we have found gives us a wonderful opportunity to start looking for other voids like that. But I don't really know that. Nobody knows the answer to your question right now, whether we should expect to see more of these or not.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's partly why it's exciting. We have sort of opened up a new regime. People had studied voids on much, much smaller scales before, and there were lots of them, and people were starting to do detailed studies. But as Lily is pointing out, there could be a whole population of these things out there to find, and we may have just found the tip of the iceberg. People didn't expect to see it from the smaller things that they'd looked at before, but we just don't know.
Isn't the universe supposed to be made of 20% about this dark matter or more? Wouldn't we expect even to see that there?
No. Apparently, that void is empty of dark matter. It still has dark energy in it, or so we think. Mm-hmm. But there are no stars, no planets, no gas, and no dark matter.
And the lack of dark matter, I think, is we can't see the dark matter. So it's not that we don't see it that's the basis of the claim that we're making. The point is that in order to create this cold spot in the microwave background, we have to pull out the dark matter also. So it's really an inference from our observations that the dark matter must be missing from there.
Mm-hmm. Now, you've been an astronomer for many years. I'm interested in the process that goes on here. Why suddenly you find something that you hadn't seen before? What goes on? You know, how did you make a discovery like that? Is there a light bulb? Is there a moment? Give me an idea of the process as a scientist.
Well, there was a moment. I mean, there are projects, you know, as a scientist and as an astronomer, most projects are very long term. You get an idea, something that you want to do. You maybe do a little pilot study or something to see whether it's feasible. If you need resources to do it, then you have to write a proposal. You may end up waiting a year. You may get turned down. You may need telescope time. You write a proposal for that. You may get turned down. On the big telescopes, the ratios are often 10-1 of rejection, that most proposals don't get on. And so most of the time, in order to do a significant project, there's a lot of planning and a lot of time that goes in, and this followed absolutely none of those rules because it was just an accident. And I think it's because we were so prepared in terms of already thinking about the physics, thinking about the interesting issues, that when it came up, it was, oh my gosh, this is something exciting, because we had all the background to recognize it, but it involved none of the planning that you normally do.
Yeah, Louis, past your moment.
Absolutely.
1-800-989-8255. Let's go to Tim in Grand Rapids. Hi, Tim.
Hi. It's a pleasure to be on your show. I'm a big fan. I know that there are some surveys looking for symmetry because the universe, it's a big question on whether it repeats itself or whether it's boundless and of limited space. But would this large void be helpful in looking for symmetry in the universe?
Well, no. We don't think that there is any symmetry in the universe besides the fact that the universe is uniform and looks the same in all directions at any given time. So, for example, we don't think that there are repeating universes. So in that sense, we don't think there is symmetry.
It's an interesting idea, but right now it doesn't look like there's anything there. On the other hand, we still do have some other puzzles that are coming out of the cosmic microwave background. There is a so-called axis of evil, which half of our colleagues are going to get angry that we even mention it because they don't think it's a real thing, and the other half saying, oh, good, they acknowledge that there's a problem out there. We have some really interesting problems with symmetries within the universe that we see, so not the symmetries that the caller is asking about between multiple universes, but symmetries within our own universe that still are quite puzzling.
Tell us about the axis of evil.
Oh, you should.
Come on.
You've gone there.
I can't let you get away with that. You can't bring it up and say, I can't tell you about it.
Well, astronomers have a knack of naming things after with some flashy name that already exists out there.
We know where that comes from. Just explain.
You know where that comes from. Okay. So what axis of evil in cosmological setting is this. We observe microwaves coming from very, very early universe. And these microwaves are seen in the entire sky. So wherever you look, in any direction, you see these microwaves. And they form a pattern. It's a very subtle pattern. So the temperature in microwaves is almost uniform, but there are some fluctuations. And if you look at the global symmetries in your sky, in the observer's sky, in these patterns of fluctuations in temperature, then you see certain symmetries on very large scales. So, for example, something like if you look in one direction, the temperature at 90 degrees from that direction will be correlated or similar to the one just in front of you.
Mm-hmm. Sort of like a cloverleaf pattern.
It's sort of like a cloverleaf pattern on the sky, spread over the entire
mm-hmm.
sky.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes. So, large scale patterns like that seem to be aligned with each other. And that's where Axis of Evil comes from.
That means is it called Axis of Evil because you don't understand why that is?
We don't understand what it is, and it is an axis.
Right.
Yes, and that's why it's evil, because we don't understand it.
That's never stopped you before. From
it's only a temporary roadblock. I'm sure we'll figure it out.
What's amazing about the universe is that, we say this about a lot of things, but I think it's true more of astronomy and astrophysics.
That was close.
I know. It's getting to sound like it. Is that the more we really know, the less we really understand?
No, I wouldn't say so. I would say that, at least from my point of view, the global picture is there, and mm-hmm. it really hangs together very beautifully. But the details, so certain spots, many spots in our understanding of the universe as a whole, are very fuzzy. Some of them are completely missing, and sometimes when we do fill them in, they don't seem to match what we already know. But it doesn't. None of these things are a fatal flaw to the global picture of the universe as we see it right now, as we understand it right now.
Mm-hmm. Talking about cosmology this hour, Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR News. Talking with Larry Rudnick and Lilia Williams, both of the Department of Astronomy at the University of Minnesota in Minneapolis. Let me see if I can get a quick question in. Let's go to the phones. Let's go to Kevin in San Jose. Hi, Kevin.
Hi, Ira. Love the show. Thanks for letting me on. Hey, the question I have, I guess I more than likely know the answer, is this visible through an amateur telescope?
No, sorry.
He knew the answer already.
But you can look in the direction, and you can just think about it. I mean, so much of what we study in astronomy and the things that we get out of the profession of telescopes aren't accessible to the amateur, but look southwest of Orion, look in the direction of the constellation of Eridanus, and you will be facing and can commune with the great void. It's there, but you're just going to have to trust us on it.
I'm going to have to wake up pretty early in the morning for that one. Thank you very much, and I really appreciate your reply.
Thanks, Kevin. Does it have a name like that, Larry? Is it the Great Void, or have you given it a name?
It has no name yet. We'll see what happens. The first thing it has to do is it has to hold up to scrutiny. You know, we've put our paper out there, and there are lots of potential criticisms. We've sort of given it the best shot that we can, but the job of the community now is to try to shoot it down. And shows like this are going to give them even more incentives to try to shoot it down. And so I think the first thing to do is to see whether this idea really survives or not. Are there alternative explanations that would explain the observations and not require a giant void like this? We'll see. And I think that after it becomes established, then if the community decides it needs a name, it'll come.
So far, is the best explanation for this a statistical one? That there's just going to be one of these every now and then?
No, we don't know yet. I mean, this particular spot is definitely exceptional in the sense that it corresponds to the coldest spot in the entire sky of this microwave radiation. And it is also the emptiest region in radio sources, in radio emission that Larry studies. So it's definitely a very interesting spot in our sky. But whether there are other ones like that, it probably not quite like that, but maybe there's a host of them that are somewhat not quite as big.
So it's cold and empty.
Yes, it's cold and empty.
Wow.
boring to travel through.
But nature abhors a vacuum, we've been told.
Well, that's an interesting idea, and a lot of people have sort of asked that question of us recently. Yes, if you had a gas, like the atmosphere of the Earth, and you tried to push all the gas into one corner of a room, for example, nature would abhor that vacuum you were trying to create, and it would push the gas back into to fill up the room again. But that's not what's going on out in space. There is no pressure like that. And so what's actually happening is that gravitation is causing things to clump, so that little pockets that are a little bit denser will pull more stuff towards them and build up bigger concentrations of matter, which will pull more matter in, and they will leave behind empty areas. And in fact, that's partly why this discovery is so exciting, because that development of structure in the universe, where the universe started out very uniform and eventually contains planets and stars and galaxies and us, that development of structure is the story of how we got here. And our discovery says, well, maybe we don't quite understand how that structure developed. Our theories may not be quite good enough, because they didn't predict that we were actually going to see something this large. The physical effect is there, we knew about, but not that we would find something this large. So the question is, do we really understand how structures developed? And we'll see.
Something to contemplate this holiday weekend, some good fodder for thought. Thank you, Lawrence.
Quite welcome.
Thank you very much, Lilia.
Thank you.
Lawrence Rudnick is a distinguished teaching professor, and Lilia Williams is associate professor, both in the Department of Astronomy, University of Minnesota in Minneapolis. Have a good weekend. Our program is produced by Molly Webster, Karen Vergoth, and senior producer Annette Heist. Charles Berquist is our director. Flora Lichtman is our producer for digital media. Josh Rogerson is at the controls here today. If you'd like to write us, please send your letters to Science Friday, 4 West 43rd Street, room 306, New York, New York, 10036. Also, surf over to our website at sciencefriday.com. We are collecting and amassing your video casts. You're creating some terrific videos for us. Send us some videos. Send them in about stuff that you're interested in having to do with science and technology, nature, all kinds of stuff like that. We'll put them up on our website. Also, we're podcasting and blogging, so we're looking for your participation. I'm Ira Flatow in New York.